comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. Whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous planet, thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you matter and because you have a right to know. There are so many mysteries in the world. There's so much that, is hidden from us on purpose, and so much that is hidden from us simply because we have not yet discovered it. And that's what we're all about here. We're all about taking a look into the world of the strange and unexplained and discovering what we may discover. The Alternative Universe Eye Conference for May is coming up on May the 19th. You need to be watching this website, kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see when the tickets go on sale, which will be within the next 24 hours, there'll be a big link that appears on our main page that says Alternative Universe Eye Conference. Really big link. And you'll just click that and get your tickets. Remember, with the Alternative Universe Eye Conference, you don't have to buy any tickets for travel. You don't have to pay for a hotel, extra meals at restaurants, ground transportation, long-term parking, none of that stuff. And on top of that, you usually have to pay, you know, a couple of hundred to $300, sometimes even more, for one ticket into the conference. Well, that's not the case with the Alternative Universe Eye Conference. Alternative Universe Eye Conference comes to you, and it's streamed directly to you. And you don't have any of those other expenses, and the ticket price is only $10. So be watching the site for the link. It's coming, and you'll want to be sure and jump right in there and get your tickets. We have to stop selling tickets on the 18th of this month, and the next day, of course, is the conference. And so ticket sales close on the 18th. You want to be sure you don't wait. Jump in there and get your tickets, okay? $10. The Kevin Smith Show is listener-supported, and we've been listener-supported now for a number of years. Way back when we started being listener-supported, people were predicting our demise, and we've come close, I'll tell you. We have come close many times. But our listeners keep the show going. And let me invite you to do that. It's always free to listen to this show, but if you are a member at The Kevin Smith Show, if you join, it's going to cost you 25 cents a day. That's $7.50 a month. That's all. And for that, you get you get loads of extra goodies, like getting to watch the show, forums and chat room, and we just had our monthly chat. I go into the chat room for a monthly chat, a two-hour monthly chat that I do the first Saturday of every month. We just did that, and it was a lot of fun. We had some new people in there too, and that's always a lot of fun. So if you're not a member, fix that. Join tonight, okay? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. One thing that I forgot to mention at the top of the show, and I want to be sure and mention it, is the K-Files. The K-Files is our free weekly newsletter, and we've been publishing that since 2000. And we have subscribers that subscribed in 2000, and they're still with us. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. It's got to be a good publication because people stick with us mostly. So the way it works is get over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, subscribe. You're going to immediately get a letter, an email, that has a link in it for you to confirm your subscription, okay? Now, for some people that wasn't working, I think we've got that fixed. So if you've been trying to subscribe and it hasn't been working, well, give it a try, okay? And that should work for you. You know, for a number of years, when I came back to the United States, I lived in and broadcast from the Phoenix, Arizona area. And Phoenix, Arizona is in a desert. It's in a valley, and this valley is a desert. And this desert extends all the way down to the border with Mexico. So that includes the Tucson area and areas south of Tucson. In Tucson is Ron Quinn, and he is someone who has spent a lot of time exploring the desert out there around Tucson and down towards the border. There are a lot of mysteries in that desert. I've talked to you about them on a number of occasions. Jerry Wills has talked with you about some of those mysteries on a number of occasions. And just two or three months ago, we were privileged to have Ron Quinn with us, and he talked with us about some of those mysteries in that desert. It is a very, very mysterious place. It is also a place where, for some reason, a lot of people decided to hide treasures. Ron Quinn spent about 2 years, he and his brother, living in that desert full time, exploring. And there's probably, and even after he moved out of the desert, he still, over the years, has been going back again and again and again and again and again and again to explore. And if there's anybody who knows about the mysteries and the mysterious treasures of this desert that extends really just north of Phoenix all the way down to the border with Mexico and across the border into Mexico, it would be Ron Quinn. He's my guest this evening. Ron, welcome back to the show. We're glad to have you.
Hi, Kevin. It's been a while since we talked.
It has been. It has been. But I am delighted you are here.
Okay.
Now, Ron,
okay.
Whenever you were with us before, one of the mysterious things you told us about, and we only had time to sort of talk about it in passing, I want us to start with it tonight. You told us about a wall that, very mysterious wall, that someone has built up on top of a plateau or on top of a mountain. Mm-hmm. And then there were some mysteries about that wall actually having moved. So I'd kind of like for us to go back and tell us, first, when did you discover this wall, and describe the area that it's in?
Okay. We were down here from 1956 to 1957, my brother and I. And then within a few months, we took on two friends, Walter and Roy, and they became lifelong friends and partners for over 42 years. And we were out in the hills by Sardina Peak, which rises abruptly from the desert floor, And we came down the slope, and right below us we saw this stone wall. And it measured maybe, I'd say 400 or 500 feet long. Now on the west end, where the drop-off is, the wall is only about 6-7 inches high. It hasn't fallen over because there's no rocks there to build it up. As you wind eastward, it gets bigger and bigger. It makes kind of a half-moon circle, continues down the side of the hill where it's about 4 feet high and 3 feet wide. There is no reason for it to be there. You can't live there. It wasn't for defense. So we started asking different people about it. Now, Louis Rivera rode for the Arawaka Ranch in that area, and he used to come into our camp to tell us off the stories that he heard from his grandfather. And we mentioned the wall. And he said, there's no wall there. He said, what have you boys been drinking? He said, nothing, except we took pictures of it. So after a while, we went to Tucson for a few days. We had him developed, and we showed him the pictures, and he couldn't believe it. He says, I've never been over there. I says, yeah, you're a cowboy. I says, you're riding the lowlands. You're not up on top of the mountains looking for cattle. So this here wall, I had my brother take a picture of me standing alongside it. He was on a flat rock. Years later, I guess in the 90s, I met Bill Connolly. He kind of announced what I was meant, and he wanted to see the wall. So after a torturous climb, cutting all the way through Cat's Claw, we arrived at the summit. And not being there for a long time, I hadn't seen all the changes. So I told him, I said, stand on that flat rock, get a picture of me standing alongside the wall, which he did. When they were developed, I compared them. Somebody or something had moved the wall about 7 to 8 feet away from this big boulder. In the black and white, you can see the wall goes to this big boulder and the doglegs up the side of the hill. Now it's been pushed out and straightened out. We're talking tonnage here. And we never found out what the wall was built for. But it had something to do with the Indians, I believe. So, months later, we're up in Prescott, and I met this fellow in the park there. We started talking about the area. He had been down here sometimes. I told him about the wall. And he says, well, does it have a half-moon circle in it? I says, yeah. He got real startled, and he says, you found it. You found it. I said, I found what? We all looked at each other. He says, that's the ancient healing wall.
I'm sorry, the ancient what?
The shaman had their altar.
Yeah, wait a minute now. The ancient what wall?
The ancient healing wall.
Healing wall, okay.
Healing wall. And the shaman had that altar with a half moon circle in it. So when you go up there and stand around, it's kind of a weird feeling you have, like you're being watched or something like that plateau. And I never said nothing to Bill Connolly about it when we went up, and as we broke for lunch, he says, this is a strange place. He says, I got a strange feeling being here, like we're not wanted. So I took some young fellas up there one time, never said a word. They got the same feeling. So this gentleman I met in Prescott, I says, a healing wall? He says, yeah, that's what used to heal the Indians in battles, you know, and things like that. He says, they had all this smoke going on. So I says, it sure sounds like the same thing. So when Connolly went down there, he was sitting on the wall. So I told him about the healing wall. And he said, I don't think it's working. He says, I've had hemorrhoids for years, and I'm sitting on the wall, and I've still got them. He says, nothing's healing here. But no one knows why the wall was built. And if you go southwest from the wall, you come to that plateau we talked about last time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to stay at the wall for just a minute. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, somebody moved this wall.
Yeah.
They straightened it out. Most of the white settlers around this area didn't know anything about this. You just discovered it, and a guy that runs cattle out there had never seen it. So most of the white settlers in the area knew nothing about this. And of course the question is, so who moved it and why? So let me ask you this. In this area, are there still indigenous tribes living in the area?
Yeah, we have the Papago and Yaqui reservations just south of Tucson here. There's a couple of big reservations out there.
Okay, so is this wall on a reservation?
No, it's on national forest.
Mm-hmm.
But some people figure, one idea one friend came up with, he says, maybe each year the wall is slowly being straightened out until it's in a straight line for some religious thing. Because that part is straightened out. I haven't been back there since then, but if I go back up again, I bet another section will be straightened out. But you're talking tonnage. I mean, no one's going to go up there and do it for the heck of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is a desert.
Away from the boulder.
Yeah, it is a desert, so it's very hot in the summertime.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's hot. It's hot down there now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so which direction does this run? Does this wall, does it run north and south, east and west?
East and west.
East and west.
It looks like a snake. I call it a snake. That the tail points toward the west and the head points toward the east. And a fellow was up in a plane, took an aerial picture of it. I can't find it. I don't know why. And you can see it snaking through the hills there, makes that half moon circle, and then it heads down the hill and disappears.
How long is it from end to end?
Oh, I'd say it's... Looking at that photograph, it'd be 100, 200, 300 to 400 feet.
Okay, so it's substantial.
But why is it so large on one side, and as it tapers down going toward the west, it gets smaller and smaller?
Yeah, I would have no idea. Are there any petroglyphs in that immediate area around that wall?
None at all. Uh-uh. If there were any, see, the mountains are made up of mostly andesite and royalite, just a lava. And if you carve anything on there, it flakes off after a couple of years. You hit it with a hammer, you see a whole sheet fall off. So if there's any carvings on, they would have fallen off the boulders years ago.
All right, so have you been able to find anybody that will speculate as to how old this wall is?
No, there's bits of pottery, but not by the wall. If you are on the wall looking toward the east, you look down a big valley, and on the other side is a mountain called Cerro Pilon. And we found a cave that was hidden, that wound back inside the mountain, and it had a natural crack running up to the top, like a natural chimney. Mm-hmm. And it looks like Indians had lived there one time. And all on the outside is broken pottery. And you go across the valley, go up the side of the hill, you're at the wall. So you still can find bits and pieces of pottery laying around.
Mm-hmm.
So Indians had lived there at one time.
Any idea which group of Indians lived there?
Either the Papago or the Pima.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Then you got the Apache, but they're way over on the east side of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's mostly Pima and Papago.
Well, the Pima are more up toward the Phoenix area, aren't they?
The wall?
The Pima.
The Pima, yeah. They got a reservation here. There's some Yakis on one small one. And they have two big reservations where they have gambling now.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they're Pima or Papago.
Mm-hmm. But no petroglyphs, no signs of any living right there around the wall.
Just a broken... broken pottery and that cave we found. It was a natural cave that snuck inside the mountain. You had to crawl in there on your hands and knees. And it was big enough maybe to sleep half a dozen people.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have struck up a friendship with some of the Native Americans there. What do they say about it?
Well, I got to reach back a couple of years. Over in Alta Valley, which is east of Arivaca and the Tumacacu Mountains, where all this goes on, we ran into this old Indian. I didn't know what tribe that he was, and it was something about that plateau, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking to him, and he talked in broken English, and it came out that we told him about that plateau, and his face lit up, and he says, "That's where people disappear." Now, here's an old Indian who knew something about the plateau, and we talked about it last. Several people had disappeared in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew of the plateau.
But he didn't comment about this wall, huh?
No, he just knew when we described it to him, you know, he says, "Oh, that's where people disappear." Because the Indian had disappeared through the archway, and then that fellow that came down each October to go treasure hunting when it cooled down, he used to camp below Dick's Peak, and Louis used to ride by and talk to him. He said he was fairly friendly. Then one day he came by, and the guy wasn't there, never showed up, disappeared off the face of the earth. He had to find his relatives to come down to get the equipment and the horses he had there, and he just disappeared.
So let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question about this cave you found near the wall.
Right.
You went inside, and it appeared that it had at some time been occupied.
Yeah.
Let me warn you, we're about to go to break, so I'll ask the question, and then mm-hmm. when we come back from break, we'll address that. But the question is, it looked like it had been occupied. What are the chances of other caves being all around that area that white people just don't know about that may, in fact, still be occupied, and perhaps whoever occupies them is responsible for tending to that wall and maybe even responsible for some of the disappearances? We'll get the answer to that. When we come back, we're going to step away for 3 or 4 minutes, and then we'll be back.
Can get information that's out of this world.
All right, we are back, and we're talking this evening with Ron Quinn. Ron Quinn knows more about the desert in the area around Tucson, Arizona, in every direction around Tucson. He knows more about it than probably any other living human being, and he's talking with us about some of the mysteries of that area of the country. You don't have to go to Mars, the Moon, Venus, or Pluto to find mysteries. There are mysteries there, but there are mysteries here too. Okay, so Ron, I had asked a question before we went to break. The question being, what are the chances that there are yet some indigenous people living in some as yet undiscovered caves in the area around that wall? And perhaps that's who is tending to the wall.
It sounds plausible, but where would they live? Where would he get their food? Where would he get their water? You know, that is a desolate country. What I think is happening, that there's people on the reservation that know of that wall. It's passed from father to son, and they're living on the reservation. And every couple of years, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, they go to the wall and start straightening sections out. So what happens when it's completely straightened out is just like a straight as an arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of reminds me about this 2012 thing where everything lines up and the world's supposed to blow up.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope it doesn't. Yeah, I hope it doesn't. So, I'm not arguing for the idea that there are indigenous people living in caves in that area. However, it is true that if you get into a cave that goes far enough and it runs a little bit deep enough, you can get into areas where there are pools of water in the caves. And
we never ran into any caves that had water. There used to be two big springs there, the Fresno Spring and the Lion Canyon Spring. Both of them were dry as a bone for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they had running water all year long in both of them. So this is just a mystery with no answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why was it built? Why is it being straightened out?
So what about that half moon area? Is that straightened out?
No. That's about, I'd say about two-thirds of the way east from where I say the low section, as I call it, the tail. And
mm-hmm.
then as you start going east, it gets bigger and bigger. Then it makes this half moon circle, goes over a pile of rocks, which they're using as part of the wall, then it snakes down the other side.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and another thing, I mean, you're on top of that mountain there now, and we all know what boulders look like in a river for centuries. They're real smooth, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Part of this wall is built with chunks of andesite and royalite, and occasionally in there you see these round, smooth rocks. They had to come from the valley below and hauled up the side of the hill. You're not going to find them right on top of the mountain there. It's all broken lava.
Mm-hmm.
So these came from the riverbed, and occasionally you see them stuck in the wall, all these nice, round, smooth rocks.
Right now, the
cantaloupe.
The structure of this wall, you have, no doubt, you have seen pictures of the buildings that were built by the Maya and the Inca and so forth, down in Central and South America.
Mm-hmm.
Does this wall look anything like that, like those, where the stones are cut and fitted, or is this sort of stacked?
They're just piled up. I mean, mm-hmm. they're put together where they're not going to fall over, but they don't look like those rocks where they're all joined together at different mm-hmm. shapes and sizes. It's just a rock where they used to build it up from the bottom, but it's about the same size up on both sides, and it's flat right on the top.
Well,
why
it
tapers down to where it drops off the hill, that's a mystery.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask that is because I have talked with indigenous people, Native Americans in the Phoenix area, who told me that many years ago, centuries ago, the Maya were coming up into this area trading, and that they had trade up in as far up in as north of where Phoenix is today. And so I was just wondering, if perhaps this was something that had been left by them. Have you ever found anything, any traces that were left by the Maya that you knew about, the Mayans?
The only story I heard from this fellow by the name of Workman, and he lived out in the hills a little too long, but he was a nice old fellow. He tried to tell the truth. And he had a big fortress he built out of rocks and cement in Peck Canyon. It looked like a fort, maybe 20 by 20. And we were talking to him, and he says, up the canyon, it's washed away now, he says, that there was a big sacrificial stone about 3 feet across with Aztec carvings all in it. He said it had rolled down from the top of the hill and broke. He said, I had one piece here, the other one I left in the wash. And he says, I met this one gentleman that collects this stuff, and I gave it to him back in the 40s, I think it was. That's the only connection that I had between the wall and the Aztec or the Mayan.
Mm-hmm.
But we looked around and never found the other pieces. He says it's broken in three pieces. And we believed what he said, but when Crazy Davis was into the scene run... That
okay,
kind of
so
stories, I mean, quickly you could make them up.
So, Ron, all through that area, I mean, it, folks, if you just go to this area that Ron is talking about, if you just go there once, you will fully, completely, and absolutely understand when Ron says it's desolate. And that being the case, isn't it kind of amazing that there were so many towns that sprang up? There were Indian tribes living out there. There were,
yeah.
I mean, and treasures from centuries ago that are buried out there somewhere. What's the deal with this desert? Why are people coming to this desolate place? And
of course, they hear all about these buried treasures. See, the Spanish were there, and that's where the mountain got its name, the Tumacacris, and the mission was San Jose de Tumacacri.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, why did the Spanish come? Why did the Spanish come?
They came, I think Father Kino was the first one to come in this area, and then the other Spanish came in and started building churches in Mexico, and they worked their way north, and they built Tumacacri, San Javier, and several other ones. And then when the Spanish left, they were kicked out because they were working the Indians a little too hard in the silver and gold mines. And in 1751, it was a big Pima rebellion where they attacked the missions, they killed some of the padres, and the ones further north knew what was happening. They got their ox carts called carretas, and they loaded up their treasure and they headed toward the west coast. Some of it made it. Some of them went into the mountains and hid their treasure in a cave, an old worn-out mine shaft, sealed it up, hoping they would come back.
But okay, all right, so I think you've touched on the answer, which is they were there for mining silver and gold. Is that right?
Yeah, they mined for 150 years, and not 1 ounce of the gold or silver was ever shipped out. They kept stockpiling it in the missions. So in the big rebellion, they grabbed what they could, put them in these carretas, and one broke down on the western slopes of the Tumacacris. And that's known as the treasure of Carita Canyon. And that's well known. And the next one is the Guadalupe treasure. It's supposed to be worth a couple of hundred million, but maybe at the price of gold and silver today. And a fellow's down there right now. He's been there 8 years. He has a permit. And he's trying to unseal this tunnel, which leads to the treasure room. And he's doing it all by the law. He's got his permit, but he can't use dynamite. He has to take it all out by hand and crowbar.
Mm-hmm. Because so, has anybody...
In this state, he had the superstitions. It's now a national park, and you can't treasure hunt. You can't go in there. You can't land a helicopter there. Now they're trying to turn Tumacacris into a park.
Mm-hmm.
Which they say they're going to leave the roads open. You can camp about 100 feet on either side, but no rock collecting, no treasure hunting, no mining. So the door on that's going to be slammed as soon as the economy straightens out.
Oh, well, then it's safe then. That's never going to happen.
Santa Rita's, and that's a park, too.
Well, some of the treasure that came from Mexico up into this area. I mean, some of it was mined in this desert, but some of it came from Mexico. With the Spanish when they came up, and they had confiscated that from the indigenous people in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Where is all of this? It should be billions of dollars worth of stuff by now.
It's all buried in caves and sealed up, or put in some of their old. They had the Tumacacri mine, they had the San Pedro mine, they had the Pearson's Conception mine. And it must have been 7 to 8 of them scattered through the Tumacacri Mountains. So if the ones that didn't run off right away went up there with their treasures and started sealing them up in the side of the mountain with the Indians' help, and then they took off on the burros, the horses, whatever they had, and all went back to Spain. When he got back to Spain, King Charles blamed them for the revolution, and they weren't allowed to come back over. They were Jesuits. So what came over next was the Franciscans, and they weren't too interested in treasure, that I heard. And then 1800s, the story started. Old prospector hears this story, the other one hears this story, and they start going up in those mountains, blasting and digging, looking for signs, trying to find some of these treasures. A few small ones have been found. Not mentioning names and stuff, but one was 82 pounds of gold bullion. That was back in the 80s. And then some coins are found. There's a lot of bandit loot buried there, because when you go over Dick's Peak, it's just a straight shot right into Mexico. And there was a posse chasing 4 or 5 guys that hit this stagecoach. And when it was down by the ghost town of Ruby, when they found them there at camp, there's a big fight going on. They all got killed, and they looked around the area, and they couldn't find where the gold was buried. So they figured it was buried someplace from Dick's Peak Saddle down to this area by Ruby, and it's supposed to be worth, I don't know, 60,000 or 70,000 face value. Now, a $20 gold piece, and then was worth $20. Now you can get as high as $2,000 for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So people go out there and look. I've met these two young guys, they're both mechanics, and they were glad they met me, because they were in the mountains, couldn't find a thing, and I'm passing along to them everything that I know, because everything that I was taught and learned when I was down with other old-timers, they're all gone. Me, I'm pushing 80. I don't know how many years I got left. So when I go, there's more stories lost.
All right, we have to step away from break. We will be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Ron Quinn. We're talking about some of the mysterious things that are right here on good old planet Earth. And for those of you that are in the United States of America, right here in the USA, some very mysterious things. Now, the last time that Ron was with us, we talked about this archway that exists out in that desert, or it used to, and the stories are that it was some kind of a portal where people actually disappear from this time and apparently go into some other time. And there are stories of people who actually saw through that archway people and things happening that were not dressed per the current time of the witness. And so we talked about all of that, and this same desert is what we're talking about tonight. Very mysterious stuff around that area. Ron, you mentioned that there's one treasure out there that's alleged to be out there that is supposed to be worth around $200 million today. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the Guadalupe treasure.
Why is it worth $200 million?
Well, they said in the Spanish documents they buried, turned around, 900 mule loads of silver, and I think 500 or 600 mule loads of gold. Now, that's a lot of ore. Now, what makes me a little doubtful about it is the Indians were just laying on their stomachs, chiseling out a little hole to the ore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to come up with that large amount, even 150 years, is kind of stretching the facts a bit. That's supposed to go, 30, 40 feet or more into the side of the mountain, and then they cut a big room out, and they stacked the treasure in there. And then they blew the top of the mountain down with dynamite or whatever they used to cover the entrance, and that's where a friend of mine is digging right now.
Is it possible that, I understand what you're saying about it would be pretty difficult for that much ore to have been mined even in 150 years, but is it possible that this contains some of the confiscated loot from Mexico, from the Mayans and the Incas and the Aztecs?
Well, that was mostly the Spanish. They came north here, but not too far into the country. But the Aztec did. It was up in Utah. There's mountains there where they got these Aztec figures carved into the sandstone.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the treasure itself. Is it possible that this big $200 million load of treasure, that some of that may have been confiscated from the indigenous people in Mexico and brought north by the Spaniards? Maybe it's not everything that they mined here.
But see, when the Aztec were raping and killing in Tenochtitlan, the Aztec capital, they were taking all the gold, and they weren't going north. They had to load it down. They were heading back to their ships, not heading north. See? So maybe a few of them did.
So you mean when the Spaniards...
You could have grabbed some and came north, but how they would make that walk from there up to here without being killed by other tribes? Because most of the tribes hated the Aztecs. But I think most of the gold was mined, and in the Santa Rita Mountains on the east side of the valley, a lot of gold came out of there, and the Tumacacris is supposed to be silver and gold. Now, I can see them taking the gold out of the Santa Ritas, but you go into the Tumacacris, there never has been one active mine there. Unless the Spanish were finding these glory holes, they call them, you know, and they knock out maybe 5 or 6 ton of ore that's half gold, but to come north, carry all that gold, I don't know. Of course, the Spanish had it, they were heading back to the ships.
Well, so you don't expect that's really going to be as big a treasure find as is rumored?
No, because I've heard rumors of treasures, and one fellow found one over by Yuma, and it's supposed to be worth a million or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you tell a story, the next person adds to it and adds to it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this professor was over there in the 40s. It was a military proving ground then, and he snuck on. He had some real good information that he had gathered, and he found where the gold was, and it was $60,000 worth of gold coins. And everyone says, oh, it's worth a million.
Mm.
See? So these big treasures now that people are supposed to be looking for, like the Guadalupe, I'm sure at the price of gold and silver, if they found it, maybe $500,000, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because what they put in there was the ore. It wasn't solid gold or solid silver. It was already in the surrounding rock. So you pick up a rock, and it's about one-third silver. Another one's one-fourth gold. And that's made up the 900 and something mule loads of silver.
I see.
It wasn't bullion. It was ore that hadn't been processed yet.
But now you told us about one that a fellow found that was 82 pounds of gold bullion, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so some of it
obviously had been processed by some people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the party that found that, most people, they read about a treasure story, they go out where it's supposed to be, they do their blasting. They don't find us, they go home. This was a treasure in search of a story. It was found, but no one knew who buried it until these people went down to Mexico and they dug into the facts. And what they came back was that this padre was kind of a maverick. He had his own mission there. And he passed the collection plate around the soldiers and the farmers and all of them. And he amassed all this gold. And then he melted it down into these little bricks and small pieces, a little cross on. And he came north to build the legendary mission of Ciro, which would be in the flats by the Santa Ritas. It was a walled city way before Tucson was a walled city. The Chamber of Commerce don't like to hear things like that. They swear that Tucson was the first walled city. And he went up there, and what had happened, when he first came north, he was attacked by the Indians. They had an encampment. So he didn't want to run back with the gold, so they buried it around this mountain. It's a long, long process, but it's too long to get into. And when the Indians were gathered up, he came north again, removed three or four of the treasures. There were different locations. Went north to build the legendary mission of Ciro and disappeared. Never was seen again. He was attacked, I guess. The Indians wanted the burrows, and they killed him, and the gold was meaningless to them, you know. And he disappeared, and there were nine of them left. And these people figured out where it was buried, and came to 82 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So there is gold there, you know.
So people are still out looking for the rest of this gold?
Pardon?
People are still out there looking for the rest of this gold?
Oh, yeah, there's not as many. The kids now, the younger guys, want to sit around and watch television.
Mm-hmm.
And the old-timers, like me, they're all dying off. And there's very few people that's going to take the time and go out there. Maybe for one day it's going to be rough as hell for them. They're going to say, the heck with this. Let's go home and have a beer.
Mm-hmm.
The original old-timers that look for this stuff, and we was Arawak, amongst them were in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Well, they're all gone now. It was 56 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all dying off. Charlie Bent knew a lot of stories. Louis Romero, my God, I wish they had portable tape recorders then, the stories he told us. Not just on gold, but what his father told them and what his grandfather told them about the history of the whole area. And they had old Indian out there called Nicho. He had one leg, and he made himself a small crutch.
Okay, tell you what, we have to step away for a break. So when we come back, we'll pick up right there with this story about Nicho. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, my guest is Ron Quinn, and we'll continue with him on the other side of the break. Don't forget, if you haven't subscribed yet to the K-Files, be sure you do. It is free, and it comes out each and every week. So for those of you who have tried to subscribe before and it didn't work for you, we think we got that fixed for you. So give it a try. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you're here, and you have my sincere sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. My guest is Ron Quinn, and we're talking about
a very mysterious part of the United States of America. Folks, if you're not aware of this, this desert that we're talking about extends from just north of Phoenix all the way down into Mexico. And across this desert, this is where the Hohokam lived, the people who built all of those canals that became the birthplace of Phoenix, Arizona. Something like 165 miles of those canals, water canals, are used by Phoenix, Arizona today. And nobody knows really who are the Hohokam. It's a Pima word that means the people who were here, but they're gone. The people who are gone. We don't know really who they were. There are mysteries like that extending all down through this desert. And there are mysterious, mystical places all down through this desert. And there are very strange things of events of history that have happened all down through this desert. And Ron Quinn is living history. Ron Quinn has lived in this desert, explored this desert for many decades now. Ron, you were about to tell us, when we had to step away for break, you were about to tell us about an Indian named Necho. And we had to step away before you could tell us anything about him.
Right. His name was Necho. He was the town wino. Mm-hmm. And he picked up little jobs here and there. You know, he had an old shack he lived in. And before we arrived there, they said, oh, Necho will find out you're treasure hunting. And he'd say, give me a bottle of wine and I'll show you this and that on the desert. And you go out there and he runs around in circles. He can't find it and he gets his bottle of wine. But one day we were talking to him, and we were talking about this lost Spanish town, and he said, I know where that is. He says, you give me a bottle of wine, I'll take you there. So I said, well, what the heck, let's go see. So Walt wasn't with us then. He was over his humor for a couple of months, our other partner. So Roy, we piled in his Jeep, put Necho in the front, and away we went across the desert. There's no roads there. It's all flat. He'd stop, he'd point this direction, that direction. After about a half hour, he says, stop. And we're right by the edge of a big bank that dropped down. We couldn't get the Jeep down, so we had to walk across and kind of half carry him. And right by this clump of trees, there was the outline of the village. There's about 8 or 9 dwellings, and all that was left was the rocks they put down first before they put the adobe up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And up on the side of the hill was 3 or 4 graves, had some rocks around them. So as I told people, I said, if you befriend an Indian, old Indian, or a Mexican, you treat them right, they know things, I says. And if they think you won't want to find something, they will tell you these stories, and most of them are true. So if we would have said to Necho, oh, the heck it was with you, we never would have found it. And it was built there by a Scottish captain. I think he was given that land, the land grant from the King of Spain, the story goes. And as you go west a short distance, you come to the northern slopes of the Las Guias Mountains. Now, you can always find gold in that place, nothing commercial. But if you go out after heavy rain and the gravel's been washed away, you go with a metallocator, you might find a couple of nuggets. A.J. Allen had 2 or 3 bottles filled up with nuggets that he had found in that area over a period of 40 or 50 years. So we actually found the spot. We marked it on the map, and we brought him back to town. And he says, oh, if you want to go out again? He says, I'll show you where there's a treasure. So I said, if you know where the treasure is, I said, why don't you dig it up yourself? You change the subject.
Yeah. That's a good question, isn't it?
Listen to these people. Look at how we found the plateau.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? We were coming back from Nogales. They didn't have a superhighway there, just a two-lane road. And his old Indian had a Model A with a blown tire and no spare. We shot by, turned around, picked them up, took them to the Kinsley Ranch, which is now the Cow Palace. There's a gas station there. We fixed it up for him, brought him back, mounted it, and he couldn't thank us enough. And then months later, he was riding for the ranch, and he came into our camp, an old John the Indian. And he's the one that told us about the archway. He says, nobody outside the tribe has ever told anybody about this archway. So I says, why are you telling us? He says, because you helped me on the highway, see?
Mm-hmm.
And he told us where the archway was, told us we had seen it from a distance, and so started the story, you know. And we never would have found it or heard the story surrounding it. Louis had come across it, but he didn't know the stories about it. The looking through the archway, you see a whole bunch of Spanish soldiers going to Tubac. It was a Spanish fort, and other people had seen things.
All right, so let me ask you about this archway again. Now, we talked about it somewhat in detail in our previous show with you, but let's talk about that for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
The native people that I have talked with, now I have not discussed this with hundreds of them, but here's the way I look at it. If I discuss this with a few, and all of the few know something about it, then it's a pretty commonly understood or commonly known story among their people.
Right.
And so I've talked with native people about this in the Phoenix area. And what I've asked is, there are a lot of people now who are saying that the ancestors of the native people had dealings with people who came down from the stars. They talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
This archway, is it even feasible? Is it possible that this archway was somehow a portal by which some of these, we'll call them star people, came down? Mm-hmm. In fact, the native people I talked to called them star brothers.
Right. Might be. Because I've watched all that on TV, too, on the Discovery Channel, Ancient mm-hmm. Aliens.
Uh-huh.
I love them all, but some I got a question, but they got pretty good theories about the star people. But see, the original archway was 7 feet high and 3-4 feet wide. As I told you in the last show, it started falling. The top fell over and broke up, and then the two pillars fell over and broke.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this happening over a period of years. Then I hadn't been there in a long time till the two brothers went up. And they came back with a picture of this other archway, which is right off east of the plateau. And this thing is massive. And I says, where'd you find that? And he told us. I says, the four of us went back and forth across that area for miles. I says, it's too big to have missed. And this thing is 10 feet high and 19 feet long, and it has a big archway right in the center. It's never had been there before. We had searched and researched that and never found it. They had the picture. So a couple of months ago, a couple of fellas I know wanted to see it, and we went out in their Jeep, and I hiked on up there, and they saw it and took some pictures, etc., etc. And everyone who goes up there, tell them, go where the big circle, not circle, it's a straight line of stones. I call them the guardians. They're all different sizes. They're pretty big. They're right at the edge that drops off 45-degree angle down to the canyon. You got to walk to get to it. And I said, dig around there. That's where the geodes are. That's where the crystals are. And even Jerry, they didn't dig there. So when I was up there, I went down to where we found some of the geodes. I hadn't been doing any digging for 15 or 20 minutes. I came up with two beautiful crystals.
Mm-hmm.
I took one and sent it to Jerry's wife. You know, I said, we found this in the, right by the edge of the plateau. I said, I thought you might like one. The top of it is pretty clear. As you go down, it kind of starts to fuzz out, you know. It's mm-hmm. kind of smoky looking. So this thing's there to find, but they never seem to want to dig.
Well, all right, so let me ask you this. Do you think this new archway is a replacement for the old one?
It's in a different area, though.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But where did it come from? I checked the bottom. It hasn't been moved in there. It's part of the rock. So, well, you want to start getting way out now, you know, parallel universes and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Because people going up there, they don't see the archway, but they see this half piece of geode, about 3 feet across. That's a big geode. All the crystals were taken, and it was sitting there. There's one fellow found it with his wife. The boys went up there. They couldn't find the thing, but they found the new archway. Bill and his wife was up there. They went all around there. They never found the new archway. It's kind of bending time, changing all the time, and you must be there at the right time. I think it's a freak of nature.
The
crystals, the electricity in the air, when everything sparks at the right time, something opens up.
Well, and people need to understand this archway, if it was not there, when was the last time you saw the old archway?
Back in the 70s.
Okay, so if it wasn't there in the 70s, this new one. Okay, if it wasn't, folks, it cannot be that erosion caused this. And the reason can't be is because, number one, a huge rain in this area would be what you would call a sprinkle. In the rest of the United States, it's almost nothing.
They have to wash 20 yards of rock away, because this is on a big flat. It has to be 15 feet high of rocks and all that washed away. And the original plateau hasn't changed one iota. This is only a few yards toward the east.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of theories kicking around, but you have to be there at the right time. The things could be going on all the time. You're 12 miles from nowhere, you know, and so you got to be there at the right time. When Jerry was there, he saw these burn spots on top of the plateau, you know, and he thought they were caused by lightning. But that's where we saw those big balls coming down two nights in a row in 57, I think it was, and two of them came down right back in the mountains on that spot, and they weren't flares, they weren't from planes. There weren't meteorites, just two big balls floating down, all lit up. The next night, at the same time, they appeared in the sky and landed in the same spot. Now, maybe whatever is happening there is causing these burn spots that Jerry saw they were burned from the lightning.
All right.
It's a good place. You have to live up there for 6 months. You just set up camp and spend days checking that place out.
All right, so now Jerry told us about some very weird, anomalous, pretty violent weather that took place when he took his little expedition.
Oh, yeah, picked up
his wife. Yeah, picked her up and threw her on the ground. Mm-hmm. So you've lived out there in that desert. Did you ever see anything like that?
No. I've seen gusty winds like we have all the time, you know, 45 miles an hour gust, and then 10 minutes later another small one, but not big enough to pick a person up.
Yeah. So what do you think that was all about with Jerry and his team when they had that?
Well, if you go back to the spirits of the Indians again, maybe they didn't want them there, and that was their way of telling them to leave.
Do you think there's anything to that, Ron? Do you think there's anything to those stories about the spirits of the Indians doing things like that?
Maybe. I'm just grabbing for things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the star people. Maybe something they left behind. Maybe there's something buried in the ground there. Maybe they're the ones that took the big crystals out of the 3-foot one that was sitting there for years and years. But things change. You got the big archway, the one that disappeared. You have the arch. You have the big geode, and a few other things that seem to change back and forth.
And the wall.
Wants to get back up there again.
Mm-hmm. Do you when you go up there to where this archway is, do you get a sense of something otherworldly there, or is it just other people that say they sense it?
No, the experience that I had, I was out there by myself. I was at the canyon. I hadn't been up in the area in a long time. I decided to hike up to the plateau. You go up this canyon, and it makes a sharp left turn. It gets real narrow. So I'm hiking up. I didn't go up the canyon by that the turns around and comes out the back side. I went up the old side, right up the face of it, where I come out to where the guardians are.
Mm-hmm.
And about halfway up, I stopped for a rest. Of course, this thing will tear your heart out. It's such a hard, difficult climb. So I'm sitting on the side of the hill facing toward the north, just resting, looking down at the canyon right below me. So I decide to move on. I said, but something looks different. I said, there's no canyon toward the left of me. So I hike down to the canyon. I'm 250 feet or 250 yards, I'm starting to forget now, old age, back down the canyon that I was climbing on a different slope facing south. So I climbed down, found out what had happened. I walked up the side of the canyon, passed by where I had rested 15, 20 minutes earlier. I get to the top, and it was deathly quiet. There wasn't a bird, there wasn't wind, there was nothing moving, just silent. And I looked at my arms, and the hair on my arms was standing straight up, flickering around like I was next to static electricity.
Yeah.
So that kind of shook me up a bit. It's the only weird thing that happened. So I go down the same way I came up, but I'm further toward the east, I think. And I stop, and there's a big flat rock there. Never saw it before. Again, we covered that whole area and studded in there. This big flat was about 40 or 50 thunder eggs. You know what they are?
No.
Yeah, little nodules mm-hmm. that formed in the rock. There were air pockets, and they filled up with quartz or something. You cut them in half, and there's different colors inside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The ones we found were kind of crappy. So I knocked off a whole bunch and brought them back to camp, got back Tucson here and showed him to the gang. And he said, where'd you find them? I said, on that slope that we climbed to get up toward the plateau. And I told him about feeling that static electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how come I'm walking up there, I sit there for a rest and I'm facing north, instantaneously I'm on another hill, they're almost the same there, and I'm facing south, and where there was nothing on the left side is now a canyon. Well, it's the one I just passed by. I climbed down to it. I recognized it right away. That's the only experience that I had. Roy and Walt, the only experience they had during January, they were up there getting a bunch of geos for a friend of his that lives in Tucson here. And Roy just doesn't like those spooky places, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were gathering them, and they looked up. Now, it was the summertime, it would have been heat waves. This was January. And they saw the original archway, it was still there now, and they saw it shimmering. Walt says, you ought to have seen old Roy. He threw that pack on his back and headed down that mountain like a teenager. When he got back to camp, you know, mm-hmm. I could see it in his face. He says, I saw it shimmering. He said, don't go up there. He says, that thing will make it disappear. But what moved me around? I don't get mixed up in those mountains. Like I tell everyone, you could fly me up there blindfolded, put me on any mountain peak, I'll tell you within 5 minutes where I am. I said, I lived in them for 2 solid years, and then we moved back down in the 60s. We had our own company, Aztec Film Productions, doing documentaries and training films. When things were slow, we'd lock up the place. The four of us would take off for a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only thing that happened to me, and that is the God's truth.
And that was at the plateau where this archway is.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
The original one.
Yeah.
And they had removed a couple of geodes, and then he looked up, and they both saw it starting to shimmer. And if it was January, it's okay. It says your imagination play tricks on you. It was heat waves. But not in January when it was about in the 60s. So Roy would never go back up there again. He says, I'm not going back up there, he says.
Have you heard any strange stories about this new archway?
Not a word. By the time we found it, most of those people, Aravaca and Louis, had passed away, you know. But the old Indian told us where it was and told us about the Indian disappearing. But we had heard the other stories from the different buckaroos there about seeing the soldiers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we never tied it in with the archway till all these stories are happening within a half a mile to a mile around the archway.
Mm-hmm.
So we started putting two and two things together. Most of the buckaroos knew where that archway was, but they had no idea about the stories that they would be tied together.
Mm-hmm.
And there it sits to this day. I guess I'll be up there one more time before the Grim Reaper gets me.
Well, but the new archway, you haven't heard any mysterious stories about?
Not a word.
Mm-hmm.
I told the brothers, they go up there about once a month, horsing around. And I said, you go up there someday, and that thing's gone. I said, get the hell out of there.
Well, I wonder. Look, last time you were here, we showed a picture, and I just couldn't find it again. But we showed a picture of it, and the rock that forms this new archway, it actually looks like a snake.
It does. It looks like it comes up, and a snake is resting on the column, because you see a pointed nose and an eye.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a snake or a lizard.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't hand-carved. You could tell that rock, you couldn't carve it. It would just break up.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wondered so much about this new one, because most of the indigenous people of the Southwest United States and going all the way down into Mexico, Central America, and South America had a great reverence for the serpent.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered if whatever it is that formed this new archway had some spiritual link, if there is some spiritual link,
yeah,
to some sort of ancient serpent god.
I did know that you had a picture. I guess Jerry gave it to you, right?
Yes.
The new archway?
Right.
Yeah. And that, there's actually two. If you look on one, there's one of the brothers sitting on top of it.
That's the one I had.
That's the one you have.
Yeah.
The other one is better. The shadows bring out the facial feature of the snake a lot better.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back. When we come back, the telephone lines are open. Don't go away.
Listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Ron Quinn about some really mysterious places right here. Basically next door to you, folks. I mean, if you're in the United States, this is in what they, you learned, well, I don't know, if you're pretty young, you didn't learn geography. But if those of you who went to school when it was school, you know about the great American Southwest. Well, that's where we're talking about. And the telephone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment for Ron Quinn, we invite you to give us a call at 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. For those of you who are not in the USA or you're not in Canada, we have an additional way for you to get in touch with us. The phone number will work, but we know it's expensive to make international calls. And so for you, we have
something called the flash message. Just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, and you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you will see a link that says flash message. Ron, we have a caller on hold, so let's go to the phone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin and Mr. Quinn. This is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, I'm calling from the great American Southeast.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, my experiences in the American Southwest have brought me the most definite paranormal experiences I have ever had in my life. You know, I've had some ghostly experiences down there that I will never forget. My kids know about it. My grandkids know about it. Going into where you are, Mr. Quinn, I know that the mathematician Kurt Gödel, who was a friend of Einstein's, had this thing called the incompleteness theory. And the incompleteness theory demonstrated that there are an indefinite number of parallel worlds. And we can be inhabiting any number of them at any given time. And I'm thinking that given the presence of the geodes, the crystals, the unique mineral content of the geology there in the Southwest, that perhaps the walls between the different dimensions are very thin, and that given the right meteorological circumstances, you know, the right weather, the right maybe astrological configuration, that there can be an open leak, you know, where one dimension can come through and another dimension disappear, and one dimension just bleed right into another. And the American Southwest is a very magical place, and I think it's no accident that the license plate of New Mexico is called what, the Land of Enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
It is a truly enchanted area.
So Ron, what do you think? Do you think it's an enchanted area?
Well, something is causing it, and I've heard about this parallel universe too, and anything is possible. I don't know, maybe 100 years from now they'll find out what's going on, but anything is possible down in that area there, in that mountain range. Like I mentioned, that plateau is about half quartz. There's big chunks of quartz there, about the size of your fist, and there's crystals, and there's geodes, and that has something to do with it when this thing starts up. And like the gentleman says, it opens up for maybe a minute or two. You're looking into the past. For some reason, you never see the future. All you see is the past. Like the Indian disappearing and the Spanish soldiers. And then Louis says they had wild horses there. There were roundup time. And they were camped by Clifford Wells there, or Murphy Wells. And they heard the herd of horses coming closer and closer. They looked at each other. They dove under the trucks. As that sound reached the edge of the wash, it abruptly cut off. That could have been the boundary line. But they said that they heard them. And Louis grinned and looked at me. He says, I know what you think. He says, a bunch of Mexicans out there getting drunk on tequila and coming up with these stories. But not Louis. People, Aravaca says that Louis tells you something, you put your life on it being true. But the gentleman's right. There's strange spots here. They're called ley lines, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jerry mentioned those. A bunch of ley lines are cut right across that plateau. So everything together, when everything comes together at the right moment, bingo, you can look someplace for a minute or two, and then it closes up again.
Steve, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Let's say that this theory is true, and that let's say that it is as you've described, that because of the geological composition of that area, that perhaps the line between various dimensions or timelines is very, very thin. All right, so let's say that you went there. Let's say that you were Native American and that you were indigenous to that area. You went there. You stepped through the archway. You're in now a whole different dimension. Would you see the same people in that dimension that you know in this one? Your people, your tribe, would they be there?
I have a feeling that I would be seeing ancestors.
Okay, so it would be a time travel.
I think so. I think I would be meeting people who had probably lived in this dimension and had moved on to another dimension, and that would be my ancestors.
Okay. So
now,
okay, go ahead.
Well, now I'm not Native American, but I can tell you that when I passed through that area, when I moved through from Dallas, Texas to L.A., and I spent a bit of time in New Mexico and Arizona, I saw some amazing apparitions, and I saw some people. They were definitely people, but they couldn't meet the same, shall we say, let's say they weren't bound by the same physical laws that you and I are bound by. For instance, we're bound kind of by space and time while we live in our physical bodies here. These people were not bound by space and time, and it was a very unique experience, and it would certainly take more time than I have here to describe it, but it all happened right there in the American Southwest, out in the desert.
Okay.
And without the assistance of any kind of entheogen, I might add, I was straight as a nail.
Okay. I believe you. All right. Thank you for the call, Steve.
Yes, sir. And thank you, Mr. Quinn, for being part of this show.
Hey, thanks for your speech.
Okay.
Well, something's going on. Keep coming back to those terms.
Yeah, well, definitely something is going on out there. You know, I used to live on the north side of Phoenix, the extreme north side at one point. But I've lived all around that area. I've also lived on the south side. I've lived on the east side. Haven't lived on the west. Yeah, I have lived on the west side of Phoenix. But when I lived on the extreme north side, you could walk right, go out into my backyard, jump over the back fence, and you were in the desert. And I used to show a picture of that on the show. But there are just strange, strange, mysterious things that happen in that desert. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello. Hello, Ron.
Hi.
When you're in this desert, the indigenous people, I guess you want to call it, did you run across any certain, I guess we'd call it prayer, they might call it rain dance, whatever, that went along with this spot?
No. Uh-uh.
That's a good question.
Like that.
You know, what I was wondering that for was if they had some type of special summoning call or whatever that might bring some of this on.
Mm-mm. Nope. Just what I saw there. There's just nothing. Well, there's a couple stories of different ghosts being seen on the northern, the eastern slopes, you know, and the archway is in a straight line to where the wall is, the straight line, and then you go down toward that knobby hill, I call it, and strange things have happened there too with some campers. But your question is, I couldn't catch it all because...
Well, what he wants to know is...
going on.
What he wants to know is, do you know of the any special prayer or incantation or dance that the native people would use to cause the activation of that archway?
Maybe years ago, but I've been over to the reservation by Santa Via Mission, you know, and they've had shows put on, and I've been there several times where they had different chants and dances, but they never told us what they were about. So some of them were hoping they were going to get a good harvest, you know, and mm-hmm. hoping that the child was going to be born right, things like that, different dances. But that's the only native dances I've ever seen here.
Other than the stories, was there any of this written down at all, like the Mayans wrote down part of theirs to date? Anybody write down anything about this at all?
No. I've read many books on the Mayans, the Aztecs, and the Olmec, and nothing was ever mentioned about any archway where people disappear. Like the Indian, they never knew where it was themselves, so the Indian... coming back from a hunt, they started chasing each other through the original archway. One jumped in and vanished, and that started the whole thing.
Wow.
They came by and threw sticks in there. One old lady threw a rabbit in, and that disappeared, and they really backed off. And they called the doorway to the gods, I think. And then the story started spreading. More people would go up there, and then they would die off, and somebody else would pick up the story. Now, old John, I think he's gone by now. He was in his late 60s, and that was 55 years ago. Well, like I said, at the beginning, I'm trying to pass everything I know on to these two brothers. And if that book of mine ever gets published, it'll be about an inch thick, 8x10, and it'll have about 100 pictures in there of these different things that we had found. So the editor has it, and is just waiting to find the right publisher, I guess.
Can you do anything with that, like finding, caves or something, or using GPS or something?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, we had metal locators and things like that, but there's new equipment on the market now, and if I was spending more time, I'd go out and buy it. It costs a couple $1,000s, but I could buy it easy. And sell it for some of these treasures. But I don't think it would prove anything around the archway. You know, it's just mostly crystal and quartz.
All right, we have to step away for break. Rusty, thanks for the call, man.
Yep, thanks.
All right. Okay, folks, we'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Ron Quinn, and if you have a question or a comment, the telephone line is still open, but will close pretty soon because we're on final approach, and that means that we don't have a whole lot of time left in tonight's show. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Ron, you were telling us about, we were still talking about this archway, and you were talking with Rusty about it, about how there are witnesses that have seen strange stuff happen there. And, in fact, one of your team saw the archway begin to activate, right?
Two of them, Walt and Roy, I saw it starting to shimmer.
Uh-huh.
And that's when Roy took off like a scared rabbit.
Yeah. So two of your team actually saw this thing begin to activate.
Yeah, it started to shimmer. There was no sound. Just they saw both columns starting to move real quick.
Wow.
It started to shimmer. It seems the shimmering starts first, because when one of the Lopez boys saw the row of soldiers there, you know, as he looked through the archway, he watched them, and they shimmied and disappeared. And the rancher saw the padre walking across the wash. That's another story. They saw him shimmer as he reached the other side and disappear. And all of it was at about a mile of the archway.
So all right.
Quite, very strange.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Avi from New Jersey.
Hello, Avi.
Hi, hi. Hello, Ron.
Hi.
I was listening to the show, and I was thinking about the. Have you heard of these? There's these rocks in Romania. I was thinking about the archway, and these rocks are. They call them trovants. They, when they rains on them, they people there. They say they move and they grow on their own. It's kind of like a, I guess, I don't know a lot about geology, but like a concretions, I guess they call them. But these specific ones, they say they grow. And I thought, I know it doesn't rain much down there, but maybe you know it's a different kind of them, and maybe they really are able to. I don't know if they're living, but. It's just an idea,
yeah,
I guess.
Thing. Glowing rocks when it rains on them. It's activating something there, some chemical. The only rocks I heard that were glowing is that lost city down in Brazil there where it's got these big columns in a circle and these big balls there, they glow at night. I think the story was true. They would have found them by satellite.
Yeah, but now what Avi's talking about is growing rocks. They get bigger.
Yeah. They and okay. So maybe by changing shape and maybe these rocks would. I mean, if we're to make another archway, it would have to be some kind of intelligent, you know, thing to do it. So.
So Avi, are you postulating here that perhaps this may be something that looks like a rock to us, but is actually a life form?
Perhaps, yeah.
What do you think, Ron?
Well, that was well known. It would have been scientists checking that out years ago. I mean, is it something that's kept secret within a small area?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, if you really read about it and everything, people know about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I don't really know other than to say that for it, you know it's. There and it wasn't there before, so I just thought about it. It could be
right.
Such a unique thing that it was never really thought of in that way. I don't know.
Well, we have lots of archways in Arizona, especially up north. They're all sandstone, and the wind blows a hole through it, and you got an archway. But I've never seen any archways down here except these two, and both within a few hundred yards of each other.
And they're made of volcanic material, are they not?
Yeah.
So the wind's not going to blow a hole in that.
I don't know. It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
But the sandstone can wear down pretty quick.
Yeah. Okay, Avi, thank you for the call.
Thank you, Ken.
Uh-huh. You know... Ron, on the one hand, it is, I agree with you, scientists would have been really looking into this if they knew about it. On the other hand, they wouldn't have been talking about this. This is the kind of thing that gets covered up. If it were some kind of life form, you can bet they would cover it up. It would be classified. Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Greg from Kennewick.
Hello, Greg.
I've been listening to your show, and I remember when you interviewed Jerry, you were talking about the windstorm that the Ken was going.
Yeah.
Well, there's a site up in Pennsylvania called the Susquehanna River Archaeology Center.
Mm-hmm.
And that lady on there has a page that talks about the shaking tent ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Run across that story out in the Midwest.
You sent me a link to that, I think, last time.
Did I?
I think
okay.
So, because I've read that.
Did you? Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I'll get off and let you finish. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's a ceremony, apparently an indigenous ceremony, where it's called the Shaking Camp Ceremony. And it, I guess, sort of, I'm not sure if it commemorates an event like Jerry Wills told us about, where his camp was just blown apart by straight line wind. I don't know if it commemorates that or if it protects you from that, or but it is called the Shaking Camp Ceremony. Well, Ron, we're just about out of time, and just like last time, it's fascinating to talk with you. And I am so glad that you were willing to come and be with us this evening. I appreciate it.
Well, much down the road, if you need me again, I'll get on to the ghost stories of the two macaques.
Okay.
Two apparitions found, and I went and visited one of the families, and I could tell that they were telling the truth, but it's too long to start now, but there's two or three ghosts there. There's the Spanish soldier who was killed on the hill, and his apparition is seen riding down a hill. He goes in back of a big rock, and you hear coins falling on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And Frank Sofito brought us there, and he says about 8 o'clock at night, of course, nothing happened, but we checked the area where the coins were found clattering on the ground. And then he brought us up the next day. We stayed there overnight, and he showed us the grave of the soldier. And the soldier was the quartermaster. They were bringing coins or wages to the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So the apparition looks like he's trying to still deliver the coins. That's why you hear them falling on the ground when he rides in back of this hill. And they saw it two nights in a row while fixing the fence. But it's just a story, you know.
Well, mysterious things do happen all over the great American Southwest. And it's good to talk with someone who's lived out there, seen some of these things, and experienced some of the strangeness. Ron, if you will, just stay on the telephone with me for a moment. I'd like to talk with you after we bring this in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Ron Quinn, and again, fascinating stories. As he said, most of the younger people that come to that area, they're more interested in their iPads. And, the life of an explorer is hot and dirty and dusty and dangerous. And so here's someone who is a living voice of the exploration of this desert. And what a great privilege it is to have him with us. I want to remind everybody that we have a free weekly newsletter. Sign up for that. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.